I'm Clara.
And I'm Joanna. And we are two sisters from Sweden.
And you're and you are officially, now if you change the name, like, can we change the marquee tonight to Two Sisters from Sweden?
Two Sisters from Sweden?
Yeah.
That's yeah. What
instead of first aid kit.
Yeah, no.
I think Two Sisters for Sweden, it's very, what would
it's
that be?
Long.
It is a little, and what would the acronym be? It would be T-S-F-S.
Yeah.
That's Tisfus. Tisfus.
Tisfus.
I don't think so. Sounds like a great holiday to celebrate, though.
Christmas and Tisfus.
Yeah, Tisfus.
Yeah.
Don't you do that in Sweden instead? Never mind. Okay. So I'm going to rattle off a whole list of all the things that would probably make up the first 42 minutes of any given interview.
All right.
We got your Jack White. We'll get back to Connor. Did you ever actually enter high school, or did you actually never make it?
I never.
Yeah,
went
I know
to high
one of you did.
Okay.
I did, but it's not really high school. It's like gymnasium. It's called in Swedish.
Right. You put a song on the internet. There was a cover of Fleet Foxes. Let's see. So I've covered. That's like the whole laundry list of everything that everybody else goes through. Right. Let's do the Connor thing.
No. Yes. So what happened was, well, we started out, we listened to Bright Eyes. We made an EP in Sweden. Then we made the Fleet Foxes cover. And then when we had made our first album, we met Connor and gave it to him.
In Stockholm.
Okay, let's circle back. So wait, prior to putting the Fleet Foxes, because this is not in anywhere. Prior to the Fleet Foxes cover, you made an EP.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. It was called Drunken Trees. We made it when we were both still in school. It was released by The Knife's record label, Rabid Record. Yeah, so, and then I think, a lot of people think that we hadn't done anything kind of musically before we did the Fleet Foxes cover. But we had already done that, and, you know, we're playing shows in Sweden and in Europe, too. But then when we did the Fleet Foxes cover, that kind of...
Okay, but that gives people a little more perspective.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really relevant for people to know that it wasn't instantaneous combustion. It didn't just go, boom, there you were.
No, absolutely not for us. I mean, it's been like a gradual, you know, it's been going back.
And that was
bit
2007
better.
Or 2008?
The EP was released in 2008, and then later on that year we did the cover.
Right, it's not like you're doing sold-out shows and everything you're doing and you didn't pay any dues there.
No, I mean, in Sweden, we just played some shows in Sweden, and then after the cover, we kind of got, like, a more international sort of breakthrough.
Yeah. And so we got, like, a record label outside of Sweden.
So what else do people really, in these kind of conversations, each of you, is there something else that you really want people to know? Because we're going to go through a lot of things, but that people instantaneously miss, that they just jump right over within seconds. There's got to be a couple of things, like your cousins instead of sisters. I mean, you know.
Just happens sometimes that people don't know that we're sisters and think we're just best friends. That's weird.
Because you don't look alike at all.
You don't think so?
Some people think we look like twins. Some people say we like...
I was being facetious.
But it's...
Because a lot of people say they don't think we look alike at all, so that's why I never really know.
Why? Because one's got dark hair and one's... I mean...
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It never happens. It's never happened in the world, ever.
Well, and a lot of people forget...
I'm so amazed.
A lot of people forget our first record. Even the Rolling Stone were in the latest issue, and they wrote that our new record is our second album, but it's our third.
Yeah. So it's our fourth.
So people kind of forget the first two that we did.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah, it's kind of like they don't count because...
They just want to jump over to the current things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have a history anymore.
No. And not like have a history where it's like homemade records, which, you know... weren't like produced by
some cool guy.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, they were produced by a cool guy. They were produced by our dad, so.
He's a cool guy.
He is a cool guy.
He's like, and your dad was yeah, exactly. So an English-only school where you grew up, which was suburbia technically, right?
Yes.
Like a little bit of a bedroom community of Stockholm. Is that unusual to go to an English-only school?
I think it was. I mean, at the time.
So was that a decision made by said parents?
No.
Well, it was like my friend went there, I think.
Yeah, and then my best friend ended up going there
as well. So it was just convenient. Like, it was really close. And then we happened to we learned, all our teachers spoke English. So it was really
It was really, really important.
And it was really diverse. Like, it was like an international school. So like students were from all over the world.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And one of the things, I'm going to skip ahead here, but one of the things I remember, it's way deep here in the questions, when I was doing my research, is that you were saying that writing a song in Swedish would be kind of daunting for you these mm-hmm. days. It would be kind yeah. of scary, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's strange, but it's kind of like, you feel kind of naked and
exposed. Like yeah. Like it's,
and it's harder. Like, I don't know. It's harder to write in Swedish. I don't know if it's just because the language is different, but it's harder not to write something and it sounding like a cliche, or I don't know why that is.
Where did that single that's hiding in my case there, where did that come? Where was that in the, I remember getting it. I remember playing it. And it wasn't until I got Lion's Roar that I connected the dots.
Mm, yeah.
So how did that come up?
Well,
because he invites very interesting people into
yeah,
that lovely.
Yeah, he does.
And did you go to Nashville? Did you go to Third Man to do it?
Yeah, we were. I mean, we were playing a show in Nashville, and then the day of the show, like, we got a call from our manager who said Jack White just called and asked if you guys wanted to come into his studio tomorrow and record two songs, and we were just like,
okay,
yeah, yeah. Sure, yeah.
We had no idea what to play or anything. Like, we just. Improvised.
So when you say improvise, right, the thing about Jack White songs is it's always a really interesting cover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So choosing Universal Soldier.
Yeah.
Right, Donovan.
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
Well, Buffy St. Marie.
And Buffy St. Well, Donovan had the hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Buffy St. Marie wrote it.
She had the genius behind it.
Yes. She had an angelic yet kind of scary high voice.
Yeah.
Right?
But she's so cool.
It's not shriek, but it's definitely, she can break glass.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, my favorite song of hers is a song called Little Wheel Spin and Spin.
Little Wheel
Spin and Spin, Big Wheel Turn Around and Around.
Well, that's the other thing. She has that natural vibrato.
Yeah.
That you think that somebody, like, in the 60s, you probably noticed, but they were these weight machines. People went to lose weight, and they had, like, these big things they put around their waist, and the thing shook like this. And that's kind of her voice. It's like...
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
How many takes did you do? Because he's live. I know we're going to talk about you and live, because I know you record live, but he records live.
Yeah, he really
does. He's right to tape.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, honestly. Not too many.
No, we didn't want to.
He wouldn't let you.
No.
But we don't really want to either. I think I'm, at least when I record, I always kind of, I don't want to do it too many times. Like, if I'm recording vocals, like, as long as I feel like, okay, I was there, you know, and I did it, I feel like I can't really do it better than that. I feel like it's just a waste of time and energy.
Tracking live for you is essential, because you would never get the purity. I'll do it in the full announcer voice. The purity of those harmonies if you were overdubbing, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we are always in the same room when we record vocals. We have like a
glass screen.
Between
well,
us.
Well, you have
so.
To, so that way they can still.
Yeah,
we need to like
see each other.
Yeah, we need to like know that we both are there and sing at the same time. Like, it's,
and if you compare when we've not done that, when we record separately, it's totally different. We don't really know why, but
it is.
We like adapt to each other.
Yeah,
you've decided to continue to go out there for the Connor influence, so to speak.
Well, I mean,
but it's a vibe, right? And I hate using that, but it's more about. That when you go into a studio in a small place, and not that Omaha is a, you know, it's a city, but it's not like you go partying every night there. So you really are concentrating on the work at hand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are no major distractions. And I mean, it was just like, we didn't want to like reinvent the wheel or something. Like, we just wanted to do what we did for our last record.
This is a quote that you've said several times, and I like this. That you've said that Staygold has epic arrangements.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the word epic next to arrangement. Those are two interesting words, because epic's cool, as we know, but arrangement usually means moving stuff around. Mm. So for something to be epic, it has to be way up here.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, how did it become an epic arrangement? Because that sounds like we can hear bigger stuff.
Yeah,
for me it's like a bigger sound, and this is really definitely a bigger sound on this record, you know, with... And just like the sounds that we chose, like strings and what do you call it, like toms, you know, a lot of tom drums and all that kind of creates like a big, in my mind, a big landscape,
like,
you know.
Dramatic in some ways to kind of get these emotions out. We wanted it to be kind of strong and play with the dynamic of that. And
And talking about big, Wichita is a very cool label. However, What was the decision? Who made the decision and said, you know, we've got to take this. It's not even to the next level, but going to a big label affords you all sorts of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a decision
between us and our family and everyone involved.
We just talked about it, and you know, it wasn't a thing where we felt like we lacked something from Wichita, or you know, we just felt like it was an opportunity to
move on.
Yeah, and try something else, you know, but yeah, still love those guys, obviously, you know. And
yeah, I mean, great people on there.
Yeah.
Anyway. But how do we get rid of the genre? Can we get rid of the genre thing once and for all? Can we help solve that? How do we get rid of that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like people kind of need to label things, though. Like, it's a...
Do they, though? When Elvis Presley came on, did somebody say, you know... Or when Connor came on, nobody called Connor a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, I mean, we're not interested in genres. You know, it's not like that's something that we have to kind of make up after we made a record. And then, like, yeah, then people ask us, so describe your music.
But you don't go in the studio.
I hate that. Yeah. That's the worst question.
Yeah, and that's why I'm trying to bust it. You don't go in the studio and go, you know, we're going to make an alt-country.
No, exactly. No. It's just, that just doesn't exist.
This one needs more twang. Let's put a twangy thing in there.
Yeah.
That way we'll have our alt-country reputation. What is that?
We get a lot of things like, you know, why do you sound so American? You should sound more Swedish and things like that, which I think is also, like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because, like, what is it? What does it mean to sound Swedish?
Yeah.
What does it mean to sound American, you know?
Yeah.
The other personal story is that I grew up in New York, but I grew up probably the equivalent to suburbia, and I used to take a bus from suburbia to New York City to go see concerts at the age of 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And the song that I used to sing had the lyrics, counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah.
Because I was on that bus on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I used to look around and think, this is what America is.
Yeah.
And I was very young. I was 13 or 14 back then. But you choose songs, right? What made you choose that one to play? Yeah.
Well, it just resonated with us. Like, it was, we knew we were going to do this for quite some time.
Paul Simon song. Yeah.
So we tried
every
Simon and Garfunkel song there is, basically, and sang it. And America was the one.
What were two others you tried, just out of curiosity? What came close? Because the harmonies on America, oh my gosh. Right?
The Boxer.
Kathy's song.
Yeah. Graceland.
Only Living Boy in New York.
Yep.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
But you know what? But that's more him. You see, you wouldn't have had the harmonies there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, America is like, it's such a good song because it's on so many levels. It's like a, you know, it's a story about traveling across America, but it's also a story about finding yourself and your
And I mean, and the best, like, one of my, I mean, all-time favorite lines in a song ever is like, I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping.
And I also love the one with the raincoat.
That crescendo there, the harmonies on that, you can just blow it up, right?
But the lyrics are so special. It's not like a typical, like, song lyrics. It's more like a poem.
No, it's a story or a poem. Yeah.
It doesn't even rhyme once.
But, I mean, I just, and I love that, you know, the whole, it's just so, like, I'm lost, you know, though I knew she was sleeping. It's just like, so sad.
See, I used to look on the bus and look at the faces and go laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. Yeah. She said the man that, you know, was a star.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So having Paul Simon hear you sing that.
Yeah. How did he?
No, or, but no, when how, he did.
Yeah.
And you knew he was there.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you just take a deep breath? Or did
you sleep at all?
Sleep the night before because I was terrified.
I was just so nervous. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and it's a really, like, it's a kind of, it's a strange thing to go up in front of someone like that and say, like, okay, I'm going to sing your song now and you're going to have to listen to me.
Because, hey, you know, stuck. Don't leave.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
it takes a lot of, I mean, courage and, you know, it's.
Yeah, and you kind of think, am I worthy of doing this?
You're saying, like, I deserve to be listened to.
Yeah,
by you, you
and
know?
It's, that's and like. It's, yeah, it's really strange, but you know he was very nice.
You've got a similar affirmation for one based on a song about that we're all about to hear. One Emmy Lou Harris, a song dedicated to her because same sort of qualities, same sort of things that you admire.
Yeah, at Yeah, I mean, that song is just about harmonies, you know, and singing with someone and how special that is. And
her and Graham Parsons' harmonies.
Yeah, who we've kind of been obsessed with.
Graham Parsons.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and here's what it is. It's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by others in between.